The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Gentlemen, we are back with another edition of 2 Minute Drill. It is your boy Flo's here with Scott and Pierce. We have a special guest on tonight. He is now an Indianapolis legend, but you would know him as a Chicago legend. JJ Stankovic, formerly NBC Sports with Notre Dame, and then of course with the Chicago Bears beat. Now he is a writer at the Indianapolis Colts. We are so honored and privileged to have you on here, brother. We appreciate you taking time out today to hang with us.
Hey, love the work that you guys are doing. Keep it up. Joe, I'm a big fan of yours, holding down that Bears postgame player Zoom like we did last year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, big fan of it. And keeping up with you guys helped me keep up with the White Sox, too. Just following along with your tweets. Good or bad? Good or bad?
Appreciate you.
Yeah, I have them on mute as we're recording right now.
How's Keiko looking?
Not bad. For Keiko standards. Only two okay, runs okay, given up right. In 5 innings, so can't ask for more than that.
Enough said.
It could have been 6. So week 2 is in the books. There have been some very, very, very exciting games. I was sort of shocked to see just the intensity of the game. It is such a difference from last year to this year. You know, as JJ mentioned, being in those Zooms was not the same as actually being able to talk to a player, you know, face to face. But now that week 2 is over, let me ask you, out of these first 2 weeks, it's early, what game has stuck out to you as your favorite?
I mean, I want to say the Chiefs and Ravens game. Because, I mean, that game was just so intense. And the way that Baltimore was able to, you know, pull that comeback off with, you know, Lamar just doing Lamar stuff was awesome. But I want to go that Monday night game with the Ravens and the Raiders, because I went into that game thinking, all right, Baltimore is one of the best teams in the NFL. Yeah, they've had some injuries here and there, but I got to think they're going to go into Vegas and win. But, you know, Joe, you're talking about how different this year is versus last year. That crowd in Vegas, man, they were rowdy, they were loud, and you gotta think the Raiders took some motivation from that, just getting that little extra juice here and there from the crowd and pulling off the win the way that they did. That game was just crazy. And yeah, watching the Peyton Manning, Eli Manning broadcast to that game, with just Peyton's reactions to everything, it was like I was like sitting on the couch with someone watching the game. It just so happened to be a guy who knows literally everything about football.
Yeah.
And the way that game ended, like being out here in the Eastern time zone, like Scott, I know you got it great out
it's
west.
Awesome.
Where like you don't it's ever awesome. Lose sleep over these games. Man, try being up until midnight with a primetime game and then having your kids wake up at 6:45 in the morning and you got to get them to daycare. And you're just like, but the Raiders and Ravens game is so good. And I'm like, it's like it was worth it, but man, I pay for it the next day.
I'll go ahead, Scott.
Now I was gonna say, yeah, it's perfect. At, you know, 10 a.m. game starts going off by 8:30 top, so it's definitely good out here. But you know, to comment on what you guys are saying, yeah, the crowds, that's one thing I didn't like about the NFL last year, and really NBA, really all of sports. MLB didn't feel like the MLB, the playoffs didn't feel nothing like the playoffs. The NBA felt like the playoffs once we got to like the second round, it was pretty much more full crowds by then. But NFL, it's that the crowds play a big factor. You know what I'm saying? And I think from these 2 weeks, it kind of feels like it's the first NFL season in 2 years, yeah. You know, with everybody being there. I've never even seen, like, Soldier Field was – I wasn't there, Joe, you were there, but on TV, it sounded loud as hell. So you can just see, like, you know, the intensity of each one. And with Baltimore, their first game, and, you know, Ray Lewis coming out, they had the Omar sound from the wire, which I think was dope. And they need to do every game. It's just, you can really tell that, you know, players have been waiting for this. You can just tell from the intensity on the field.
You know what I learned? Yeah, JJ, I'm sure you already knew. Since there's no fans in the press box, I did not expect fans to come back and start banging on the press box during every play. They bang literally every time it's a third down or like a long second down. I'm like, man. And somebody had opened up the window and never doing that again. It just got insanely loud in the stadium. And it just felt good to be back because last year was great, but it also felt like I was watching a scrimmage. You know, after somebody would score a touchdown, only thing I would hear is them screaming very, very distantly in the background in the field. I'd have to say, out of all of these, my favorite games to watch have been, surprisingly, the Panthers.
Man, Sam Darnold revelation. First of all, it's peak Jets for Zach Wilson to go out there 4 picks. And Sam Darnold looks like a capable quarterback now. I text my homie, Mike. I was like, hey, man, I don't know what to say. It's only what happened to y'all. Some stuff like this.
Yeah, and you know what it's? With Sam Darnold, I never knew how, you know, what he was capable of himself. I heard a lot of Jets fans saying, well, he wasn't in the great position, I'm unsure. And then to see him completely dominating these past 2 weeks has been incredible. That being said, I also enjoyed the Thursday night game. That was Washington and the Giants. Daniel Jones even stepped up a little bit. I know the crowd has just played just a completely different role. My favorite overall would still definitely have to be the Ravens and the Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs said something interesting at the beginning of the season. Well, not the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, about, you know, he wants to chase going undefeated. You rarely hear a competitor talk about going undefeated. I'm thinking that doesn't really happen. I don't know.
I didn't think the Patriots even brought it up the year they went 16-0. I don't think they were talking about it. Mm-hmm. I know Brady did say he would trade in two of his rings to have that undefeated season.
I mean, I would trade in two of my rings if I was him to have that undefeated season.
He got 6, yeah.
True. That being said, and it's so many narratives, you know, going on right now. Tom Brady himself. I mean, JJ, from your perspective, did you expect Tom Brady to be doing this? Is he 45 yet, or is he still
44?
44 years old.
Look, man, Bartolo Colon was out here hitting home runs when he was 45. Like, Tom Brady can go out here and throw 5 touchdowns. But, I mean, look. I've settled on this, and like, I know everyone when Brady was on the Patriots, he was an easy guy to dislike because it was the Patriots and they won all the time. And he had this kind of persona of being, you know, kind of stuck up a little bit. He's got to Tampa, and like, two things about Tom Brady. One thing is I've just sort of like moved into the camp of like, let's just appreciate this for as long as we got it. Because when Tom Brady made his NFL debut, I was 11. Like, I am a 32-year-old man right now who's got a wife and 2 kids and a dog and a house and a job and real responsibilities. When Tom Brady made his debut, I was out here on the baseball field knocking a ball around with Evan Turner in the Oak Park Youth Little League and having a blast with no responsibilities other than like getting on first base.
That was a very nice
and,
name.
You know, trying to steal a second.
Float that underneath there. That was a very nice name.
I did. I love just like kind of sliding that one under there. That Evan and I played baseball.
Okay, so did you get a home run off of Evan? That's all I really want.
No, because we were on the same team.
Y'all ain't going Evan, against each other in practice? You ain't never cracked one out?
No. Well, Evan also couldn't pitch because he wasn't that accurate. But Evan
he's
did
better shooter than he was a
yeah he was. Evan always tells the story that he stole 2 bases on one pitch once, which is true. Like, he literally told this story to Portland media and Boston media, and then like had those media guys like reaching out to me into my DMs being like, man, is this true? Because he like shouted me out. I'm like, yeah it happened. This kid was super wild. I'll never forget this kid's name, Otarius Treadwell. Shout out to Otarius Treadwell if you're listening to this podcast. He was the wildest, hardest thrower in the league. And Evan was just like, if I get on base, I'm just going to take off as soon as he starts like throwing because I know it's not going anywhere. And he just got to second, kept on going to third. stole two bases on one pitch. sorry for the, I love sliding that little thing in there, but yeah, sorry to.
No, that is a
rough. That is a barbershop trademark. We get off topic.
All right,
every
great.
Show.
Great.
We will start talking about the wire for 10 minutes if that happens. So it is all good. But what I think one of the biggest narratives driving this year has been the rookie quarterbacks. You know, there is Mac Jones, there's Zach Wilson, there's Trevor Lawrence, there's Trey Lance, there's Justin Fields. Of course, I know you have, you know, your hands busy as the Colts writer, but have you had a chance to watch these five rookies play? I know you said, of course, I know it's different. I know it's still the Bears fan in your heart, but you're working for the Colts, so your allegiance is there. But have you had a chance to even to watch any of these, you know, young rookies play? And what is your thoughts on this? I mean, this was a very deep quarterback draft class. What has been your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just kind of getting a little bit here and there. You know, unfortunately, I guess I did watch the Bears game on Sunday night against the Rams, but, you know, Fields obviously only played a couple of snaps, so can't really judge a whole lot on that other than he looked pretty good in those snaps. You know, looking at these rookies though, you're seeing the growing pains in a lot of them, you know, with like Trevor Lawrence, where I think I saw he's got the highest depth of target in the NFL this year. Cause like, he's just not checking it down. Yeah. And maybe that's a good thing for him long-term, but as a rookie, you know, it might come back to bite him. I mean, hey, Peyton Manning here in Indianapolis, he led the NFL in interceptions. I think he set the record for most interceptions by a rookie and then went on to be, you know, Peyton Manning. Yeah. So, you know, for these guys, sometimes testing it's okay. Zach Wilson, he threw what, four picks?
Yeah,
but like, four. Man, that's just what Belichick does against rookie quarterbacks. Like,
and they were laughable picks too. Hey, there was like some cutler joints.
Belichick just gets these guys seeing ghosts. I would not want to be a rookie quarterback, no matter how good you are going up against a Bill Belichick defense, because that is hard to, no matter how, you know, what players are out there, they're going to be well-coached, well-schemed. You know, and then we'll see with Trey Lance and Justin Fields, you know, when they get those starting jobs, you know, maybe that's this week for Justin Fields, if Andy Dalton isn't healthy, depending on, you know, how the 49ers feel about Jimmy Garoppolo, see when Trey Lance gets out there. But, you know, looking at it, at least in the AFC South, where a lot of my attention is focused, like you can see with Trevor Lawrence, the good things that he does. Mm-hmm. And you kind of figure he's going to put that together at some point, whether it's this year or not. You can see, even if Lawrence's stats may not be there at the end of the year, you can see the talent that is certainly evident with him.
Yeah. No,
I think it's kind of like off like a thread I had last night where I was, just watching like highlights of like the Patriots, who they're playing, the Jets game. And I was like, I think Patrick Mahomes has kind of messed up our evaluation of young quarterbacks. Like, I think everybody, just the way he came out, 50 touchdowns, MVP, everybody wants now. And you got to be patient. I was just really just saying this for Bears fans, because I think a lot of Bears fans expect Justin to come out and just be MVP status right away, which will be nice, but I'm not expecting that. And so I just really think you don't really know what quarterbacks you have till 3-4 seasons down the line. And we got to give these young kids more time. Like, I don't have much faith in Zach Wilson. I think he got drafted way higher than he should have been, but he's still young. Games like that are gonna happen. Trevor Lawrence look like crap, but there's not a doubt in my mind he's gonna be a franchise guy. So it's just really, we need to like kind of temper expectations down, you know, for Bears fans. It would be awesome for them to go out there look like Justin Herbert or something like that. But it's just really just making sure the process is done right with all these guys.
And let me throw something at you guys, because this was my first year on the Bears beat. It was 2017. And it was before Mitch Trubisky was even starting. We had a chance to talk with Ben Roethlisberger on a conference call. And he said something that's really stuck with me for a long time. And it was essentially like, you know, everyone's in a rush to crown the next great quarterback, but really you don't know until 2 to 3 years into their career. So like with Mahomes, all right, we can crown Mahomes. Like, we know with him, you know, and with, even with a guy like Justin Herbert, you're seeing a lot of the good things, but like, are we ready to crown him as the next great quarterback 16, 17 games into his career? Like, defenses are going to learn and they're going to adjust to these guys is what the point Roethlisberger was making. And like, he's seen it. So, you know, will if Justin Fields comes out for the Bears, and I hope he does, and he sets the world on fire, that's great, but the league will adjust to him. What's the adjustment back? What is the adjustment that Fields can make back and the Bears can make back? Same goes for, you know, Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, all these guys. That's kind of the push and pull here. So, like, you can have a guy who sets the world on fire, and then you wonder, well, what happened to him? It's because the league got something on him and figured it out. I mean, it's like it happens in baseball all the time, right? Like, Gordon Beckham has his great 2009 rookie season where he's, you know, slapping doubles off the wall, going oppo all the time. I'm thinking, man, this guy's going to be great. And then the league adjusts to him and he never becomes that superstar we all thought he would be. It happens like that in every sport with every position, but it gets more pronounced at quarterback because everyone wants to crown that next great player.
And I think we even saw that with Mitch, because Mitch in 2018 actually had a decent year. You know, that's why I feel like the expectations were so high in 2019. But once you heard, I don't know if it was, I forgot the corner name in Green Bay. When he said week one, oh, we want to make him play quarterback, I knew what time it was. Just right there. Anytime you have a defensive player say we want him to want a quarterback to play quarterback, it tells me everything. She's right. Defense is definitely adjust, and that's when you'll see who's good and who's not.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, JJ, you brought up, you know, Peyton Manning. Did he have, 28 interceptions his first year?
Like 26 or something like that.
It was something crazy. I mean.
So, yeah, it was 28. Yep, 28. 26 and 28. Then the next season, he's 26 and 15. Then the third season is when he is, I think, is when he started to become Peyton Manning. He throws 33 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. And, well, next year he did throw 26 and 23. So the fifth year, I'll take it back. The fifth year is when he started to honestly get really more common. He never threw 20 picks again, rarely got over 10 picks in a season. Then, of course, the 49 touchdown season in 2004. So, no, I do think it's very true. I think the NFL, the leading narrative for me has been just quarterback, period. I mean, seeing someone like Sam Darnold go from a situation with the Jets to where he is now. Then you have, of course, as you've seen, Carson Wentz coming from a stagnant offense with the Eagles to now he is doing, well, at least in my perspective, and of course, I wanted you to offer your understanding, your analysis of Carson Wentz in the Colts situation. From your perspective, having watched, you know, intensely and talked to him, how do you think he has fared with his new system in the Colts?
It's been good, man. Like, under the circumstances, which the circumstances are, he had a bone fragment come loose in his foot in late July. He had surgery on it August 2nd, comes back. He has to go on the COVID list for a couple of days, comes back from that. By the time the Colts get to Seattle, he's had maybe 9 or 10 practices with his teammates. And, you know, then he comes out, plays good against Seattle. And then this last week against LA, I thought he had a really good game. He was making good decisions. He hit some downfield throws. He was on the run a lot. He got pressured 17 times. And it wasn't all just Aaron Donald, which, you know, the Colts offensive line, those guys, Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly, were saying, like, that is not our standard on this team. They got to be better. But I thought what he did was good, which is why it's such a shame that he has these two ankle sprains. We'll see if he's able to go for Tennessee this week, because I think he's trending up right now, and you can see the good in him and the talent he has now in this offense with Frank Reich, where it, the one thing that stood out to me, guys, is like, he hasn't put the ball in danger. Like, he got picked off 15 times last year, and he has this one interception that only happened because Aaron Donald is just the best freaking player on the planet.
Yeah.
And he threw Jack Doyle to the ground on a shovel pass. It's, you know, that shovel pass the Bears ran to Trey Burton all the time.
Yeah.
Where they would kind of run the read.
Oh, yeah, shovel. Yeah. I see that in my sleep.
Yeah. The Colts ran it. It was going to work until Aaron Donald blew the play up. And it resulted in an interception. That's the only time Carson's even put the ball in danger. Mm. So he's making good decisions. He's making smart decisions. He's tough as hell. And like, it's hard not to be encouraged by what we've seen out of Carson. He's just now going to get through this injury. But, you know, I think you're right about quarterbacks going to spots. Like, a lot of it, you know, all these guys are talented, right? And that doesn't mean that all of them are going to succeed no matter where they go. But certain offenses are better suited to certain talents. And I think, you know, a lot of people are on the league respect Joe Brady, who's the Panthers offensive coordinator, quite a bit. And you're starting to see it already. You know, even when Carolina came here for their joint practices, I remember talking to some folks and, you know, being like, I don't know about this team. Like, they might be a year or so away, but to see what they're doing now and just, you know, watching a couple highlights, it's been like, ooh, they look like they've made some strides from mid-August to now. And you can see, you know, just the way that they're able to use Darnold is really smart with some of the concepts they're running. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they are a team that I've kind of checked out a little bit because we saw them in the preseason. I'm like, I wonder how they're going. And, oh, well, they're looking pretty good. It also doesn't, you know, hurt that I got Sam Darnold on my fantasy team. So.
True. Now, of course, from your perspective, I think you all lost, what, 28-16 against the Seahawks.
Yep.
And then a really close one with the Rams. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's still 2 weeks into the season. But overall, you talked about, of course, Carson Wentz being encouraging. Has the team itself, you think, you think they're still trending in that direction? Because we've seen teams go 0-2 and then have a great playoff run. You know, it's not impossible, of course, obviously. What has been, you know, your interpretation of how they're doing so far?
Well, it's been, you know, I mean, look, it's, you want to separate a couple things here. Just separating how the Colts have played versus the opposition. Like Seattle and LA are going to be two of the best teams the Colts face all season. And you want to take that and acknowledge that while also acknowledging, you know, that, you know, players acknowledging that, you know, especially in the offensive line, hey, we haven't played up to our standard. The defense saying we haven't played up to our standard. And, you know, you can see some bright spots like Michael Pittman Jr., you know, getting his ankle dinged up last week, coming out having 123 yards, a career high against LA and against a really good LA secondary. But then looking and seeing, well, Jonathan Taylor hasn't quite got going yet. And that's something the Colts are going to need because they've kind of built their offense around running the damn ball, which is a phrase that, you know, people like to say around here. I think it'll come together just as the season goes on. Like this is a team that, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, started 1-5, won 10 consecutive games and then made the playoffs. I'm not saying the same thing's happening this year. But you don't want to judge a team based on the first 2 games, 3 games, 4 games, even, you know, early in the season, it is hard to get a read on who's actually good. And something I think about a lot too, is Bill Belichick once said, like the first 4 games of the season are basically just an extended preseason. And you're kind of finding your identity during this time. So the Colts have a couple more games to find their identity. It's not helpful that the schedule sets up where they play 5 really difficult opponents to start the season, one of which being the Tennessee Titans on the road in a game that now kind of feels like a can't lose game on Sunday. But you want to see that identity continue to build. You can see how the pieces fit. I know I watched every single training camp practice. This is a good team that's going to be good at the end of the year. It might just be a little bit slower based on the teams they're playing and how things shook out with, you know, again, Carson Wentz being in and out, other guys like Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly, you know, having some stop and start preseasons. So, you know, we'll see how all the pieces fit together. You know, you're getting Eric Fisher back last weekend was big. You know, he will continue to kind of grow and get his feet under him at left tackle. Got to get Braden Smith back at right tackle to kind of make that offensive line whole. And once that happens, I think things will start to really look up here.
This is the thing with the Colts. The Colts are they've proven over the last couple of years an on and off playoff team. They're good enough to get to the playoffs and good enough to fight for a playoff spot. Will they ever be good enough to kick it back into second gear where they're contending for the AFC? And, you know, that's why they went out and got the quarterback and got Carson Wentz. And it was a gamble. I still think you make the gamble given his injury history because, you know, for the Colts, who else was realistically on the board? They were never going to trade up in the draft to get one of those quarterbacks. They had all of the cap space to begin with. So, you know, they were not going to lose anything for going after Carson Wentz. And it's not even to say that Carson Wentz still can't be that guy to get them to a Super Bowl. Like, I still believe in guys who can do just enough to get you there. It's just that Carson Wentz, A, has to be healthy enough and B, has to stay out of his own way. He's got the weapons. He's got a defense that, you know, when healthy and when they're all together, swarms. So this might not be the year. They might, you know, crash and fall out. I don't think they're as good as Tennessee. I like how Tennessee bounced back this week against Seattle, beating the team that Colts lost to. So it might not be this year, but, you know, next year, because they have all that cap space and you have guys, you know, growing over a year. You mentioned Pittman. I think, you know, Pittman working a full year with Carson is going to be huge for him, because I like him as a potential two. Mm-hmm. Back to the defense with Hooker and Leonard, you know, I like where they're at. You know, I really do like where they're at.
Well, I mean, think about this, Pierce, like the core of this team, which is like what you're kind of talking about there. Like, so, okay, Carson's here for a couple of years. Jonathan Taylor's still in his rookie contract. Right. Nyheim Hines just signed a contract extension. Yep. Michael Pittman, rookie contract. Paris Campbell's still on a rookie contract. He's still got quite a bit of potential there. You know, Kylan Granson's his fourth round tight end. He hasn't played a whole lot so far, but the Colts really like him. He's on a rookie contract. You got, you know, Quentin Nelson is on his fifth year option next year. Got to figure he'll be locked up long term. Ryan Kelly's locked up long term. Braden Smith's locked up long term. Going over to defense, you know, DeForest Buckner's locked up long term. Grover Stewart's locked up long term. You got a couple guys over there playing on their rookie contracts, like Quiddy Pay, who's the first round pick this year. Darius Leonard's locked up long term. Bobby Okereke's on his rookie contract. Kenny Moore's locked up long term. Julian Blackman's on his rookie contract. Kari Willis is on his rookie contract. Like, there's so much damn talent on this team that is young and ascending and is going to be together for a while, that, you know, yeah, there's an 0-2 start here, but let's kind of zoom back out and see the bigger picture of this thing, which is that Chris Ballard has built one hell of a roster, and the Colts have a good coaching staff in place to coach these guys up. So yeah, you lose the first two games of the year to two good teams. I don't get the sense that anyone around here in this building is hitting the panic button, because we all know what we got here in Indianapolis, and it's a good team, a good roster, a good coaching staff, a good front office, all the right ingredients for this team to wind up being a Super Bowl contender at some point.
Yeah, I mean, having all those people locked up and having the cap space with that is an insane privilege that most NFL teams, namely the Bears, do not have. But you brought up something interesting when you mentioned Michael Pittman Jr. that I paused for a second. I said, Junior? I said, why does that sound familiar? Uh-huh. And I realized his freaking father played not too long ago for the Buccaneers.
You're seeing all the
makes
players
it feel old.
That, you're seeing all the kids of all the players, man, that you used to play with on Madden. And it's really jarring to me that we have an Asante Samuel Jr. We have an Antoine Winfield Jr.
I covered Torrey Hunter Jr. when he was a wide receiver at Notre Dame.
That's and scary, like, to me.
Man, I grew up like hating
Torrey
Hunter.
What's my man's? I keep calling him fucking Duncan Robinson, but yeah, Corey Robinson.
Yeah.
Corey Robinson on the same team.
No, man. So I grew up hating Torrey Hunter. And then, you know, I start covering his kid. His kid's just the best. I go and I talk to Torrey Hunter at, you know, when he's in town with the Tigers or the Angels, whoever he was on then, in the visiting clubhouse at, you know, US Cellular Field. Could not have been a nicer guy. And I remember walking out of the first time I ever talked to Torrey Hunter, just being like, well, I can never hate another athlete ever again, because the guy who was like just the bane of my existence, like when he ran over Jamie Burke in 2004, I wanted to like run out, you know, as a 15-year-old, go like start a fight with him. I go and I meet the guy and he's wonderful. He's lovely. He's nice. He's, you know, accommodating. And I'm just like, I can never hate another athlete ever again, like just for who they are on the field. Because, man, when I met Torrey Hunter, it was like, he's a good guy. Shoot.
That's why I don't want to meet Aaron Rodgers.
You'd probably love him.
Well, the funny thing is, I used to, when I worked at Amazon Studios, we would have people come in all the time. And the one day I took off, this happened to be the day that him and Dez Howard came in. And then everybody, I don't know, I came in and worked the next day. I was like, man, your boy was here yesterday. I was like, who? Aaron Rodgers? And it was like, we thought it was going to be like when the episode of Entourage, when Turtle met Tom Brady. And he was like, yo, we should go get something to eat. So yeah, I'm with you on that. Some people, you know, you have like this idea of them, and you're like, man, he's a pretty nice guy.
You know, they say never meet your heroes, maybe just never meet your enemies.
Right. Exactly.
But no, that's so true, because You know, it's interesting meeting, of course, last year I didn't get a chance to meet any Bears players in person outside of Zoom, but meeting several of the Bears players and learning their personalities. Like Khalil Mack, I barely understand what he's saying at any press conferences.
Do you ever understand him before that?
You know, it's funny, when I would watch him, when I listen to him on like on Zoom, the mic is right here. And so I was like, oh, okay, it's not that bad. But he's in press conference. He's like, well, you know, man, we just got to get to the ball. We just got to get put on.
Talk about anybody in Florida.
You know, he talks like he's from Dade County.
Yeah.
Dade County throwing through.
I was like, man, I couldn't hear a word he was saying. But understanding the difference and the differences of the players, you know, Eddie Goldman is very just a private person. Mm-hmm. And he's going to say about 10 words. And it's all right. That's more than we expected. Time to go. Akeem Hicks. The funniest thing was on Sunday. I had no clue about, you know, Akeem Hicks having any beef with the media. I only saw him on Zoom. But even Zoom, when I asked him, you know, last year, I was like, you know, is there any concern? And he's like, man, we fear nobody. I was like, all right, okay, understood. No complaints. He walked in like he was Vince McMahon yesterday because nobody had heard from him all camp. He walked in smiling, shaking his head. I was like, okay, I understand what's going on. But
that boy was quiet. That boy was quiet. He was like, yeah, they keep kicking our ass. I'm going to be quiet. But when we win, I'm talking again.
Oh, man. It just
definitely talking again.
He said, when Debo run, I'll be quiet. When he gone, I'll be talking again.
I forgot who pointed that out. It was just like, yo, Akeem is very loud. Akeem is very talkative. Akeem don't really be saying much when the team ain't doing well or ain't really anything to talk about. But as soon as it's time to big up, like the way that the defense responded once Mitch got out there on Sunday was definitely a yeah, I'm from talk my ish in the press conference for the rest of the week until we play Cleveland.
Once whom got out there?
You said what Mitch. He brainwashed.
I said when the defense got out there.
No, you said when Mitch went out there.
Yeah, you said Mitch.
I definitely never said Mitch.
You did.
You said Mitch. Never said
Mitch. You said Mitch. I'm rewind. You said Mitch.
You can rewind it. I definitely never said Mitch.
You're brainwashed.
Hit that 15 second skip.
Back. Right. Yeah, you're brainwashed.
That's fine. Let me finish my fucking point. When the defense got out there, the defense had that mentality when Justin got out there, it's like, yo, we ready to ball. We ready to find out. And now we definitely not going to see the defense that was very, you know, acting like they were better than they were.
Yeah.
That's what I got from the Bears last couple of seasons. They were talking all that mess because of 2018, and then I came crashing back to earth the last couple of years. Now that Justin's in there, you know, we're going to see him, and it's going to be time for them to get back to talking together.
Which is a great segue to asking JJ about the transition from a Bears beat writer to becoming a Colts writer. I guess the biggest question is, of course, I know, you know, you're born in the Chicagoland area. You know, of course, the Bears fandom, I don't know if it's impossible to leave. But how has the transition been? First of all, how was it covering the Bears for those? It was 5 years, am I correct? Or was it four?
Four seasons. It was awesome. I mean,
it was Notre Dame before that, right?
I did Notre Dame and then baseball, you know, a lot of White Sox before that. The thing with me, man, was like the White Sox are my team growing up. And when I started covering them, like I had a closet full of jerseys and hats and jerseys, and I got rid of all of it. So I was like, I can't, like, in the position I was in, it was like, I can't be a fan.
Yeah.
Trying to, like, you know, make it at NBC here. So like covering the White Sox, like I lost a big part of who I was just from the 5 years that I did, you know, like weekend duty filling in for my guy, Dan Hayes. And then like when I started covering the Bears and got a little bit of distance from it, like it started coming back a little, but it never was totally there because at NBC, it was like, well, if the White Sox are doing well and they're in the playoffs, like, oh, their travel budget's going to traveling our White Sox guys to the playoffs and not toward me getting a slightly nicer dinner in Los Angeles. So I was like, if the White Sox miss the playoffs, not the worst thing. Because,
you know, you make a lot of points here. Like, does the White Sox success, is it worth it if it intrudes on my happiness?
No. Exactly. Thank you.
Somebody like, finally gets it.
Same thing. Oh, sorry, you're a Cubs fan.
Yeah, he's digging.
Yeah, God, I know. Right, I know. Right. it ruins the dynamic.
Yeah. All right.
He was right.
But But so like the Bears, like I grew up a Bears fan, you know, like everyone in Chicago, but I kind of like, I kind of lost them a little bit when I was in college. It was harder to watch them. You know, I was at University of Missouri. Our football team is great. I just kind of got into that and like didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to the NFL for a couple of years. Then I came back to Chicago. I started dating my now wife, who's from Indianapolis, is a Colts fan. So like that first year in, man, I bought an Edgerrin James jersey. We were going to the Colts bar to watch the Colts. I wasn't watching the Bears. And then I got on the Bears beat and it was kind of easy because it's like, well, I've really been a fan of this team in a while. But like the coolest thing for me and the thing that I will like always like cherish for the rest of my life is like I did a weekly spot with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score. Mm-hmm. And like to be able to do that as a kid who like grew up in Chicago listening to 670 and like listening to everyone on it, you know, doing the Bears reports, to be able to do that for a couple of years. And also, you know, thanks to the support of Lawrence, who's just the best. Like I will always think it was cool that like I would go on The Score and then I'd have like people I hadn't talked to since high school being like, hey man, I heard you on The Score. Nice job. Like that was really cool. And like coming to Indy is a transition away from that, certainly. But like, you know, I got laid off from NBC Sports Chicago. I was there for 10 years. It was the only place I ever worked. And when I got laid off, my initial thought was like, all right, I'm probably out of the business. Like, I loved working for NBC. And I don't know if I really want to get back into this again. Like, it's a grind. Like, you know, maybe I'll find something that's more stable. And then, like, one day later, this writer job at the Colts came open. Like, the timing just worked out.
Works in mysterious ways like that.
Seriously, man. Like, if NBC had waited a week to lay me off, I don't know if I'd be sitting here right now wearing a Colts polo in the Colts facility with a job that I love and working with people who I really like. So like, you know, it's a transition going from being outside media to being an in-house reporter, which is what I am here at the Colts. But I honestly, like, I forgot how it was on the other side.
Yeah. Actually, that's because was it tough to do that? Because I know one thing that I admire about my brother and Pierce, they know how to detach. Like, the Bears, White Sox, and Bulls ruin my fucking life. Like, I will have – they will ruin a perfectly good day I'm having. And I'm going to be 33 next month. It ain't changed. I don't see it change anytime soon. I can know. Like, I knew the Bears were going to get blown out by the Rams. We said it on Saturday Night the Hallis for weeks. And I was on my couch pissed. So it's like, I don't know how to – I don't know if I'll ever be able to do the detachment – to where, like, I try to stay, you know, non-biased a lot of times, but I definitely honor people who can, you know, oh, it doesn't bother me, they're whatever, whatever, you know, because that's just something I can't do.
it was tough, man, because, like, I there were times where I would say to, like, my friends, like, man, I miss being a fan. Like, being a fan is fun. Like, getting all angry and pissed off about something, like, it's way better to be go get pissed off about Andy Dalton than it is about like real shit, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, I mean, it's great. So I kind of missed that. It was like all I was angry about was like real problems. I was like, I just want to be mad at like, and then of course, like, you know, the US men's national soccer team loses to Trinidad and Tobago, and I'm like angry about that. But I kind of like now that I've got some distance and like literal like physical distance and literal distance from the White Sox that like I can be mad about him again. Like I don't get as angry as I used to just because, like, I don't know, I still know people there. Yeah. And, you know, like, when, like, you know, Rick Hahn gives you crap about your Twitter account over and over again, and you kind of, like, grow to like the guy, it's kind of hard for me to dislike him and anything he does. But, like, it's nice being able to be a fan of, like, and I'm going to, like, I've been out on the Bulls for a really long time just because, like, you know, again, working at NBC, like, they're on our air. If they make the playoffs, like, you know, takes up travel money. I'm excited to be back in on the Bulls again. Hopefully they're good and they make it worth my while.
Yeah.
But that part of it's nice. And like, you know, working for a team, you are sort of like more of a fan because you have an interest in them. Like they're your employer. You want your employer to do well. But when I go into, you know, ask questions and stuff, I still have to have that kind of like level-headedness. And Joe, I think you do an awesome job of it, by the way. Like every time I see like a viral Bears clip of a post-game press conference, like 75% of them are your questions. So like, shout out to you for doing a really good job with that, man.
Thank you. Thank you. I will say is what was I don't know if the first game was last year, but I know I had followed you on Twitter for a while and, you know, just getting, it was basically jumping into the fire. I was like, okay, let me see how I can approach this because, you know, Scott was just talking, you know, the fan and the detachment. I hadn't detached the fan just yet. I was still like, oh my goodness. Like when I first heard this is a working area, you know, please do not cheer. I'm like, I'm like, man, I love this team. But then being able to hear, you know, you, Jason Leisure, and to have that calmness, say, okay, look at it. This is someone that you're covering and look at this team is not, this is still a team you're a fan of. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. I've noticed everyone in the press box. I mean, Dan Weaver, Brad Biggs, if it's a bad play, I hear them go, ugh. Because I know at the end of the day, it still sucks because they still like the team. But I've learned to gain some detachment. I would love more detachment from the White Sox because they annoy me. And I saw Scott's face just a second, like maybe about 5 minutes ago. He looked at his TV and said, ugh. So I'm assuming something bad happened. I don't know if it was Fry was up pitching. He must have gave up a run.
And that was Tim Anderson not giving a shit again. We're not going to get into that.
Yeah, I think from the detachment point, like, you never truly, if you're covering a sport, you never truly detach your fandom. You learn how to suppress it. I've mm-hmm. been fortunate through my time actually covering games to only really be doing college basketball. Because, you know, granted, if I was doing Duke, it might be a little bit different. But you learn that it becomes easier over time, you know, not to react during certain games or certain plays or how to react properly. But you never really suppress your fandom. You're always going, you know, insane when you see a great play, or you're always wondering what the heck is that coach doing. So you never, it really, like being that fan or having that fandom to me enhances what you do as a reporter, because now like you're focused on how to better present this to your audience, to who you are, a fan. Nobody knows how to do that better than a fan.
It's a really good point, because like we all got into this because we're fans. Like whatever we're doing, we are all fans of the thing that we're covering. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it's the team that you're covering. But yeah, I think that's a good point, man. Like you got to suppress it. But if you totally lose it, then what you're writing, no one's going to read it. No one's going to listen to your podcast. No one's going to watch what you're doing, because like, There's no interest. There's no passion. There's none of that in it.
You're cranking out AP stories at that point. You're becoming a robot, and you're not connecting with anybody who's a fan of the game, who really wants to care about your work and like who you could actually connect with. But I do think, you know, from Joe's standpoint, Joe does a great job because like he is that fan, but he also kind of, like Scott was pointing out, is like me, where, you know, he can detach. I credit the Cubs winning the actual World Series for that point, because now that they won that, like, huge chip off my shoulder. I'm not going to give a damn about the Cubs for like a good 2-3 years, and I'm okay with that. The Bulls, 4 years, I didn't care worth a damn.
Yeah.
I popped back in when they traded for Vooch. They got blown out in San Antonio. I was like, oh, I'll see y'all next year. You know, so you know, you learn to detach from that standpoint, but as far as your fandom, you're not really truly detached.
That's true. But now, of course, I wanted us to get into week two games and just, and of course, we don't have to do in-depth review. There's plenty of games that happened in week two. And of course, JJ, if you didn't get a chance to watch a game, of course, just let us know. But the Thursday,
can I do this? Because I have spreads.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, man. You know what the people want. You know what the people need. They need spreads. Thursday, we have a thrilling matchup between Sam Darnold and the Carolina Panthers, getting 7.5 points in Houston against, we're not getting tired, we're getting Davis Webb, right? We're getting Davis Webb in the Houston Texans. I don't know how to feel about this game.
Terrible game. I'm going to watch.
I don't think it will be that terrible, just because I think Carolina's got some intrigue to them.
Yeah, but they ain't even got Tyrod in Houston, though. Like, you got to give me something. I'm going to watch because it's football, but
that could not have summed up my feelings on this Thursday night game more, Scott. I'm going to watch because it's football, but
It's terrible. Like, it's just,
hey, okay. We got a good Thursday night game last week, okay? I'm holding
We did. We did.
I thought the same thing last week, and it was a great game.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. I think it was a little more unexpected because of the quarterback play, because that was the Giants, correct? And they were going against
Heineke. Jones have as decent. No, I expect Heineke to have as decent of a game.
I mean, that's, you know, another quarterback story. Wasn't he in the XFL as a backup a couple years ago?
I think of All-American Football League.
Okay, he was in the other one. That was the, what, AFL?
Yeah, something like that.
And to see him, of course, now being thrown in the start because of Ryan Fitzpatrick was just incredible. But with the Texans and the Panthers, I'm a little bit bland.
I don't know if
No, looking at this. I'm looking at he was in XFL. He's backup quarterback for the St. Louis Battlehawks in the XFL. St. Louis
Battlehawks.
Yeah.
I guess. Okay. I don't know how to feel about this. I don't think I'm gonna take it on the spread, but I think I think Carolina wins. Just Carolina's a better team. Sam Darnold's playing. I hate to say that. Sam Darnold's playing really good ball right now. God, that move. that Houston defense is just bums. They play well against Jacksonville, another team of bums. They were able to hold and cover against Cleveland, but I think they get waxed.
Yeah, I'd probably go with the Panthers. I think that's my choice.
Yeah, I'm going with Panthers too, man. It should be an easy one for them.
I'm holding out a shot for a backdoor cover, but Sunday slate, and I think if you didn't get Carolina, if you didn't get the Cardinals at 7 points in Jacksonville, like that sucks to suck. I definitely got them at 7 points in Jacksonville. I think that this is a blowout. I think that Kyler Murray is going to, at least like our early candidates, he's a sneaky MVP candidate. And this might be a hot take, but I think Arizona's defense, I think Arizona's a Super Bowl contender.
I mean, I'm not mad at that because I did have all four NFC West teams making the playoffs. I just really like Kyler's growth, you know, like he makes throws that you like, what the hell are you, why are you throwing that? And then you just, oh shit. Like he makes
them type Russell Wilson-y.
He has real Russell Wilson, you know, and he runs, of course they say run like man, like he runs, like the way he runs is funny as hell. And like, he just throw that shit up.
But it's like I'm seeing an infant on the field, but he runs a 4.2 or something.
Yeah. I love how he's always looking downfield. He's always looking to make a big play, whether he's on the run or whatever. And you know, that defense is solid. Like, is. And I'm going beyond Chandler Jones and JJ Watt being on the outside of each other. Buda Baker's excellent. Simmons. I'm trying not to get Joseph Simmons is in Denver. Isaiah Simmons is pretty decent. You know, that's our early hot take, is I can see them being Super Bowl contenders at the end of the year. I'm only saying that because, hey, Cliff Kingsbury could F it all up in the end.
But, and that defense gave up mad points, too.
True. Next game.
Oh, okay. I mean, we're all in the Cardinals. We know that. New England's getting 3 points. They're hosting the Saints. What y'all think of Jameis this past week? So I feel like Jameis regressed to his mean.
Hold on, let me get off mute for this one. Because
here comes Scott. Scott was waiting for me to mention the black quarterback.
Okay,
so like, we can't get on Lamar this week.
I could get on Lamar last week for them bullshit throws he had. No, let's not get it messed up. But y'all was crowning Jameis a little bit too early. Like, we don't know who Jameis is. Jameis can go out there and have a 4 or 5 touchdown day, and the next week have a 3 to 4 interception get it. Now, that's just who he is. We all know if Jameis can cut the interceptions. Strong. Yeah. If Jameis can cut the interceptions down by like 15, he'd be a top 7 quarterback in the league if he could do that. And that's just really what I was telling everybody. Let's give it 10 games before we can really see if he fixed Jameis or not. You know what I'm saying? And so I picked them to win that game. That was one of the few games I got wrong last week. But this week for them, I'm gonna go with the Saints this week. I'm gonna go with the Saints this week. We you know, I don't know how much of a, you know, what type of game we're gonna get from Jameis, but I think I'm gonna roll with them this week.
JJ, I don't know if you had a chance to watch Jameis Winston so far, but I don't know, what are your thoughts?
You think he's got a good grasp of the offense?
Well, I know that he got LASIK.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, maybe this is like a Rick Vaughn situation where like they fix his eyes and all of a sudden it's like, man, this guy's really good. I mean, Jameis
is
really
wild
good.
Thing.
Yeah, he's kind of got some wild thing in him. You know, I don't know. We'll see. I think I think Pierce is right. Give him like 10 games, see where he's at after that.
Sure. So no, I agree. I thought he was really good week one. Only really one mistake that luckily was an interception. This past week, it was, you know, it is, and it's also week two. And week two, you don't want to have too many overreactions. You know, week one, I wasn't completely down on the Bears. Like, we'll see. But it's also some things stick out. You know, Trevor Lawrence, he had those three picks. I'm like, we'll see. Even he, I think, two picks last week. I'm like, it's early. And
that's why I didn't overreact about Tennessee. I saw a lot of people overreacting about Tennessee after they got smacked by Arizona that first week. And then they came back, played tough, and beat Seattle in overtime. So, like, yeah, you know, the week two overreactions, like, it's every year. It really is every year. But I get from this game point, I'm actually going to take the Patriots. Jameis did not look good. I don't think Jameis has looked particularly great either. Like, you talk about the five touchdowns, but he threw only, 140 something
yards. Yeah.
Very, you know, that was a great game plan by Sean Payton. Sean Payton's got to go up against Bill Belichick, and Bill Belichick led defense. And I think that he might get clipped this week. You know, it's all really going to be contingent on Mac Jones and how Mac Jones can continue to process defenses. This will be the best defense he's played so far in New Orleans, but that doesn't mean that New Orleans can't get clipped, because New Orleans does have a tendency to give up points every now and then. So I'm going to go with the Patriots.
I'm actually going to switch my pick. I looked at my predictions that I wrote down for my show this week, and I did pick the Patriots. I'm tripping. So, yeah.
Who are you Patriots?
I said Saints a couple minutes ago, but I'm looking at my picks for this week. I actually did pick the Patriots. So, yeah.
Okay.
Patriots.
Let's go to New York. The Giants are 3-point favorites, taking on the Falcons. This is going to be another stinky game, but I'm going to take the Falcons.
I'd go Falcons. My care level for that game is very, very low, but I'd probably go Falcons.
This is my care level for this game, buddy. Zero.
It's weird. We talk about Seventh and Hollis Scott about how, you know, Atlanta fans are so indifferent to Matt Ryan.
Yeah, even though he's Matt Ryan for whatever.
Even though he's a clear Hall of Famer, I think
he's trash right now. So like,
yeah, I'm talking about like in his career. Like, we've been seeing people shit on him since they lost Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, you got to understand. Like, they lost the Super Bowl. Like,
I get it, but send your hate mail to Kyle Shanahan.
You'd be that irrational. So.
That's true. You got me there.
I mean, do you think he is a Hall of Famer?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know, Jay, do you think he is a Hall of Famer, Matt Ryan?
That's a good question. Like, first guess would be yes, just because he's been so productive for so long. But I don't know. I don't know where he would stand. I mean, he's only been 1 year where he's been all pro.
Uh-huh.
Usually folks look at that and say you got to be like a multiple time all pro. So I don't know. That's a really good question. I have not thought about Matt Ryan Hall of Famer.
I want to throw out a benchmark, and this benchmark is a guy who is not a Hall of Famer, and I don't have his stats up into my head, but he's a multi-time. He's gone to multiple Super Bowls. Matt Ryan's only going to one. I believe he's had good seasons. I don't know if he was ever an MVP or not, but if you feel like he is better, or if you feel like he is better in his career, I mean, he was MVP. If you feel like he's better in his career than Boomer, no, I'm talking about Boomer Esiason. If you feel like Boomer is better in his career than Matt Ryan, then Matt Ryan is an Hall of Famer. If you feel like Matt Ryan's better than Boomer in his career, then Matt Ryan might be a Hall of Famer. I feel like that might be your quarterback litmus test. If you think he's better than Boomer, yeah, throw him in.
He was MVP. Matt Ryan was MVP in 2016.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what Boomer was. Boomer was MVP in 88, and he was a four-time Pro Bowler. 247 touchdowns. I don't know where he stands in terms of, like, all-time list, but, yeah, that's his stats. Let's keep going down. Well, let's go to, I think it's going to be the best game of the week, and that is in SoFi Stadium. Can you believe that there's still books out here that have Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as underdogs against the Los Angeles Rams?
That's because people is drinking that Rams Kool-Aid for whatever reason.
I mean, it's flipped at some places. Like, Circa's got it at minus one in favor of Tampa. So, you know, natural correction. It feels like it might be a trap game for Tampa. I'm still going to go with Tampa.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Tampa too, man. You know, it's Tom Brady's first game in Los Angeles, which I did not know it was, but it's first game in Los Angeles. I don't really, I'm not on the Rams bandwagon like that. You know what I'm saying? I still think Matthew Stafford is Matthew Stafford. And we all know what Tom Brady can do to this Rams defense. He did it to win the Super Bowl. So I'm going to go with the Buccaneers. I think they're a better team. And I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Rams to go out there and get, you know, a convincing victory against a team that's, you know, a legit, if they're a legit contender, they got to go out there and beat the champs.
I'm going to stick with my point. I think these are both legitimately top playoff contenders, the Buccaneers and the Rams. It's early, but, I mean, Tom Brady looks better than he did last year, at least early. You know, he ended the last season with a bang, and then of course, you know, with the Super Bowl, and now he's starting off to be better. And my faith is still in the Buccaneers. With the Rams, I still like what I saw from Matt Stafford and the defense. I mean, you got Aaron Donald; he's flying around the ball. So I think this is going to be the best matchup so far, but not the only one that's going to be good. There's still a couple matchups that I am looking forward to. I think they're Titans. Do the Titans play the Colts? I believe this would be interesting.
That's this weekend, yep.
That'd be an interesting test. I think we should probably, that's probably a good segue to go into this game. And of course, you knowing much
before,
more.
Before you segue, Scott, 15 hits?
15 hits.
And they done gave up 15 hits?
Oh,
sheesh. Keiko gave up 11?
Two runs.
I'm shocked he only gave up two runs. Jesus Christ.
But with the Colts and with the Titans matchup, obviously I'm not gonna ask you. I don't know how it is, but I want to ask you, of course, you know, who's your pick for the game, since you're obviously employed by
them.
We know it's the Colts, but what is something to look forward to in this game for those who are watching from the outside, or for those who have, you know, red zone?
But like this, I'm out here in Vegas for right now. Why should I watch this game on Sunday Ticket over the Bears?
Okay, over the Bears. So we don't know who's going to start a quarterback for the Colts yet. We'll see what Carson Wentz comes back with those ankles, how he's responded to treatment the last couple of days, if he's going to get out of practice at all this week. If he doesn't start, we're going to see Jacob Eason make his first career start. The thing that I'm looking for here, though, is can the Colts defense – so the first 2 weeks of the season, Colts play the Seahawks and Rams, two teams they don't see a lot, two teams that run similar-ish offenses with Shane Waldron, the OC now up in Seattle. You get the Titans, you know what you're getting out of them. Face this team two times a year, you know what Derrick Henry is, you know what A.J. Brown is, you know what Ryan Tannehill is. And the Colts defense, kind of like I mentioned earlier, they haven't played up to the standard that they want to set. I mean, it's a team that talks about getting 40 takeaways this season, and it hasn't been there. So I'm interested to see how this Colts defense can respond, because that Titans offense is really good. Yeah. And, you know, having A.J. Brown and Julio Jones on opposite sides of the field really changes up a lot of the rules that defense can have in a game, where, you know, you really have to worry about both sides of the field. It's not like you can just kind of leave one side. So we'll see how the Colts defense can respond. Hopefully Xavier Rhodes is back this week at cornerback. You know, if you want to look on the other side of the ball, Tennessee's defense has had some issues to start this year. Certainly, maybe this is an opportunity for a guy like Jonathan Taylor to get going. So I don't know. We'll see. Really a lot depends on how Carson's ankles shake out, which, like, what, just, you know, I know there's all this stuff up there about Carson getting hurt a lot, but like, two sprained ankles. I mean, come on, that's brutal luck. That's just luck.
Yeah, I'm not sure what sport you can play.
It's luck. It's luck.
Nice, Andrew Luck.
I'm not sure. No, I walked right into that one.
I'm not sure what sport you can play, you know, efficiently with two sprained ankles. There's got to be nothing that you can. Now, we'll ask you this.
I was about to say Kurt Gibson, but those are his knees. That's equally worse.
In your perspective, of course, you have to, the Colts are your main concern. But is there a matchup this week that after the Colts are all four, if you're paying attention on Red Zone, one thing I learned from a lot of journalists last year was there was people who have reds who had a tablet next to them in Red Zone or Sunday Ticket was going.
Damn, bro, you out here snitching.
And of course, I didn't name names, but I was like, you know what? It's a good chance to focus on the rest of the league, or at least to see, especially if you have a team coming up. And so I had Sunday Ticket on. I was watching the Browns just to see, you know, how was, you know, Nick Chubb, how was Kareem Hunt, how was Baker Mayfield doing? And he got hurt, but lucky, a lot of injuries this week. But what matchup are you most looking forward to, just from a perspective of, you know, get a chance to sit back and chill? Of course, you don't have to name your pick, but what matchup are you looking forward to from this upcoming week?
I mean, so I'll be in Tennessee on Sunday, and we're going to, you know, kind of drive back, us and our radio crew. I'm going to hop in with them and just drive back. And I would love to catch the second half of that Rams Bucks game, because we just saw the Rams here. We'll see the Bucks in Indy right after Thanksgiving. And I think those are two of the best coached, most talented teams in the NFL going up against each other. So I want to check that one out. What's the Sunday night game this week?
It's Niners and Packers.
I mean, I'll watch it. 49ers have had an interesting start of the season, haven't they? I've sort of kept it. I try to keep an eye on, kind of like Joe was talking about, with like keeping an eye on the Browns, try to keep an eye on the teams who are on the Colts schedule.
Yeah.
Just to sort of have an idea of what we're going to get into. And they've been interesting. They've surprised me with some of their personnel decisions, like not having Brandon Ayuk really playing at all. I'll be interested to see what they can line up against with the Packers. I think San Francisco's had some injuries on defense already, with like Jason Verrett going out. So definitely want to keep an eye on that. But yeah, I wish that Bucks Rams game was on Sunday night, because I'd stay up until 1 o'clock watching that. Yeah. I think that's going to be a really, really fun game.
That's fine, because we're getting a thriller of Monday Night Football. My favorite division is back.
The NFC East.
NFC East. Give me the Eagles. Give me them Cowboys. Give me two fan bases that hate each other's guts and put them on primetime and Monday night. I can't wait to see two black quarterbacks go at it. I know Scott's going to be thrilled, because one of them is going to tear each other apart. I can't wait.
Okay, we got this running joke where they think I hate black quarterbacks because I don't think that Lamar Jackson can read defenses appropriately. Okay, so this has been going on for so long. Okay,
okay, man, you can root for the one named Dakota, not Jalen.
One thing I was happy to see Lamar prove you wrong. Of course, there was a bad pick. We're going to let that go.
He bounced back.
Time out. Like I've said time and time again, Lamar is a playmaker. I think Lamar is a top five quarterback. I just don't think the boy can read defense from time to time. There was stuff, even on the extra point we threw. I was like, what were you looking at? It happens multiple times. That's my only critique about Lamar. You know, if Justin Fields is Lamar, I'm fine. I'm more than fine. I'm just saying, I just don't. And then also, people on Twitter, they get real protective about Lamar. You say anything about Lamar,
part of the culture, man.
That's the wrong person you want to support me, by the way. But you know, you say anything about him, it's an issue. You know, so that's my
protect him the way that Allen Iverson fans protect Allen Iverson, and that tells you exactly what you need to know about both fan bases.
That is 100% true. That's one thing you can't say nobody. Yeah.
Isn't that the fault of like white people though for saying he should play wide receiver?
100%.
Slightly.
100%.
I would not. Oh, that would have been just such a waste.
Well, I mean, they kind of did the same thing to Justin. It's like, oh, can Justin read defenses? Justin's too mobile. Can Justin play in the pocket? Da 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 da. And so, like, that's how you have Justin Fields going from possible second pick in the draft to the Jets all the way down to 11.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, that's why I'm really. I mean, I don't know how many starting black quarterbacks there are.
There were a lot this past weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think
it was maybe half of the league.
Which is just, I mean, I'm so happy that, you know, black children are able to play in a position where, I mean, as a kid, when I was playing for Hubbard's team, the Hubbard's, grammar school team, the Buccaneers, there was not even a chance a black kid would take his position at quarterback and go to high school. It was, you're going to play receiver somewhere, or you're just going to be a running quarterback. So to see this happening where they truly are able to grow just as, you know, as a white kid, we're playing quarterback has just been fantastic. But I do have one more interesting topic that I wanted to bring up to JJ before, you know, we get you out of here. And it was about tight ends in the league. I have noticed, first of all, that nobody is stopping tight ends in the league and the change of tight ends in the league. The linebackers have not, their growth has not, well, at least in my opinion, their growth has not matched the growth of tight ends. Tight ends now are insanely big, but they're also just as fast. I mean, Travis Kelce, George Kittle, these dudes are as fast as many wide receivers in the league. You all starting tight end. I don't know if it's Doyle. I'm not 100% sure.
Jack Doyle. Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure.
Doyle and Mo Alie-Cox.
Now, I don't know who is the faster out of the two.
Well, so we got those two guys. Then Kylan Granson's this fourth rounder. He's 6'2", 240 out of SMU, runs a 4.5. Honestly, probably plays faster than that.
Yeah.
But like that, I think the point you're making here is like, you know, linebackers haven't necessarily caught up. And a guy like Kylan Granson, like linebackers, when he's running like a intermediate cross, you can't keep up with the guy.
Yeah.
So,
that's exactly what I noticed. And there will be some, you know, linebackers in the league. There's the Buccaneers linebackers who are all insanely quick. Roquan Smith is quick enough to keep up with them. But a lot of them you have insanely quick linebackers.
Leonard and Okereke are real fast.
You know, real fast, but the rest of the league is struggling to keep up with those linebackers. I mean, the Ravens linebackers are quick, but they still those traditional smack you in the mouth linebackers fill up gaps. And that is where I saw Kelce just literally a simple drag route and he's going upfield. I guess what can teams do it's almost like a growth thing, like teaching linebackers or getting players who are big and fast to play these positions because the people who are their height end up playing offense. But have you noticed that same trend of where the linebackers just can't keep up with them? And it's almost like a cheat code. If you have a Travis Kelce, well, good luck in the red zone because he's going to outrun you.
Right. I wonder if, and this is not something that can happen overnight, but like the way the Rams are using Jalen Ramsey in that star role where he plays as a big nickel quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if teams start saying, hey, we've got this big dude who normally would be a strong safety, let's make him a big nickel because we got to be a nickel even if they're in 12 personnel.
Yeah,
because that second tight end is just like a big dude who can run a 4.5 and like we got to have somebody who can keep up with him.
So I
mean, football is always cyclical, right? Like there's a new trend and then there's a response and then there's a response to that trend and then there's a new trend and all this stuff. I'm interested, like in 5 years, what kind of discussion we might have about that. If like even 10 years down the road of like, we got all these big dudes at tight end and we've got to find a way to guard them. Do you start taking those bigger safeties or even a bigger corner and saying, play closer to the line of scrimmage so you can guard those guys?
No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. One last question before I get you out. Of course, the team.
One last question.
I know, of course, you can't comment on obviously your favorite AFC team in the year. It's going to be the Colts. But in the NFC, what is the team you have really, I don't say strong hopes, but strong, you're assuming they will be, you know, one of the last teams standing toward the end of the year, toward the Super Bowl?
I mean, I've already seen them. It's the Rams. I'm really high on that team because after watching how they use Stafford, and watching how that offense evolved, and this is something I asked DeForest Buckner, who was out in San Francisco before he came here, like how has that offense evolved from Jared Goff now to Matt Stafford? And something he brought up, which was interesting, and I went back and kind of watched some of this on film, is like now they can go empty and just say, hey, Matt, go sling it. Yeah. Like there's a little bit more of that freedom that they can build in of just like, we can scheme this, this, and this, and Sean McVay is so good at that. But on some plays, you can just say, you know what, Matt, like go up and get, you know, let your receiver make a play. And, you know, yes, it's still schemed, but like you can have your quarterback be that playmaker, which in this offense with Jared Goff, it was so heavily schemed and they did such a good job getting the most out of Jared Goff there. But Stafford is on a different level. True. And like, this is something I wrote last year, the last game where Stafford came back and the Lions beat the Bears in that game, which I'm sure everyone's trying to forget, where I was just like, Stafford can win a Super Bowl. I really believe that he could go win a Super Bowl. And with the team that's around him in LA, the defense they got, the weapons they have on offense, the coaching staff they have, you know, with McVay and Raheem Morris and those guys, like I think LA, after seeing them up close now, like they look like a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
We should have beat them.
Yeah.
If we could have scored. I mean, the two possessions we had in the red zone that got down to the five and the one where we didn't get any points, those have irked Frank Reich and this team that they didn't get any points out of that, because you score 6 points, that's the game right there.
True.
So that makes me feel better about us as a team. And look at me saying us, like, you know, God, I do work for the team now.
look at us.
You know, yeah, right. Yeah, I know. I know. But it's, I think LA is a really, really good team, and one that, yeah, you know, if they're there in the end, playing at SoFi Stadium in the Super Bowl, I don't think anyone should be surprised.
I agree wholeheartedly. And once again, I want to, you know, thank you for coming on and joining with us. And I remember reading your article when you first got to the Colts, you know, and you said your wife was a Colts fan. So I know she's happy for this transition to get a chance to watch the Colts. We appreciate you coming on, you know, lending your time for us and chatting with us. It is an absolute honor and a privilege. I learned so much from watching you last year with the Bears and, you know, trying to make those same techniques my own with them. You know, appreciate you, man. You know, if you want to, you know, let the people know, you know, wherever they can follow you, or, you know, any other things you want to shout out, the floor is yours.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter at JJ Stankovitz. You're not going to see many Bears tweets. You might see some mildly pissed off White Sox tweets. We get to the playoffs. If I had a couple beverages and turn on the game, especially because our GM here is an Astros fan. So I'm going to hear it from him.
Oh, that's going to be fun.
But yeah, follow me there. If you want to read about the Colts, come to Colts.com. If not, and you want to just only, you know, read about the Bears, go follow my guy, Joe, Scott, Pierce. And, you know, one other guy to give a shout out to is my guy, Cam Ellis, who is one of my favorite people I've ever worked with at NBC. He and I got laid off on the same day. And, you know, he does a great job. He deserves more clout than he's getting sometimes, because, man, like every single one of his tweets just craps me up. So you guys do a great job, though. And I think it's great, everything that you guys are doing, getting your own independent company out there. Keep up the good work. Appreciate you guys having me on. And hopefully we'll be talking about a Colts Bears game here in shorter order than maybe the next 3 years.
That's what I would look forward to, especially an away game, because I've never actually been inside of the Colts stadium. So I would love
seen the outside.
Seen the outside, but I would love to, man. We appreciate you coming on, brother. Thank you. It was definitely a blessing. Yeah, look forward to having you on again.
All right. Be well, guys.
Yes, thank you so brother. Much. Yeah, Joe had fun playing host for today. I'm very happy for you, man. It's time for me to wrap this up. You can follow me at Cameron Santo. Joe's at Flo Zanellini. Scott's at Barchair. Scott. Pay attention to these guys at Saturday Night in Hallis. They have two shows every week, one preview, one recap. Recap of last Sunday is already out, and they'll be back to preview this Sunday against the Cleveland Browns. Justin Fields first start. That should be very fun. I handle the post games on Saturday Night in Hallis Spaces. Join me after every single game. We're going to chop it up, get your thoughts, take your comments, have a good time. Hopefully we're not lamenting over a Bears loss. You're not going to hear me on Ruthless Aggression anytime soon, because I am trying to facilitate a move and trying to do multiple shows. It's really freaking hard. So Chris and Rob are going to hold down the fort for me for now. You'll get a new top 25 on the Patreon, as well as special episodes of Saturday Night to Hallis, patreon.com/barbershare network. Rate and review us 5 stars. Leave us a comment. Help us shoot us out the algorithms. We're doing great work, man. We're about to hit the start of year 5 very soon. Like, we were drafting this up 4 years ago. Joe is in the press box of a Soldier Field now. Joe, yesterday, my price for you was a little bit, was I had a price for you yesterday. Yesterday's price is a new price.
Don't forget, I'm not going to hold you every Thursday on HMB Media, youtube.com/HMB Media TV. As usual, man, it'd be me. My brother Beyond will have a Saturday Night at the Hallis moment. My homie Mikey, we're going to be getting to the gambling odds this week, and I'll be going over week 2 and previewing week 3. I had a very good week 2 prediction-wise. I hit the double-digit mark, so we're gonna talk more about that next week, so stay in tune with that.
Yeah, man. Join us next week for a new episode of 2 Minute Drill. Once again, thanks, JJ, for joining us. For Scott, for Joe, I am Pierce. We will see you guys next week.